Oh, hey everyone. Great to be here. Nice to see everyone who's not in Sydney. Oh, the stay-at-home stalwarts. Congratulations. Again, of course, one of the things I love about Adelaide, and the reason I have such a blast being here, is that it's not Sydney. Of course, what always gets me a little irritational is when people put things here that belong in Sydney. And don't get that this is Adelaide, and it should be different, and let it be different, and for goodness sakes, what a relief that it's different, and allow Adelaide to be Adelaide. And that that said, obviously, we're here to change everything with the Adelaide Festival, and I think, thank you very much. I want to thank a lot of people in this room who have welcomed me to town quite spectacularly, and allowed for a big splash to be created early on. And that is, thank you very much. I enjoy that. The sense of controversy is one of the most important things we have going as a democracy. And to me, that's really one of the issues, is to sustain a space where people can actually disagree. And that's the only way you know you're not in a fascist dictatorship. And one of the points of the festival is really going to be to open up and sustain and nourish that space for controversy, that space for people to deal with very difficult things. That obviously we're all in the middle of a commercial culture which encourages the easy solution and the escape route. And in fact, you're not going to escape from anything. There's really nowhere to go. That's what's so interesting right now. So it all ends up in Adelaide. So my attitude about Adelaide is that it's a really great R&D location. It's a place to do stuff they can't do in Melbourne and they can't do in Sydney because of all the commercial pressure there. And in fact, in Adelaide, there's a kind of sense that there's space to consider, to do something actually important rather than just flashy, and to have some real roots. And I've been really obsessed with the difference between a kind of mail order culture, you know, where you see things that are going on elsewhere and you tick the boxes and then it shows up for a weekend. And this question of cultural rootedness, of can we make something here that's about us? And, you know, I've horrified a lot of people by talking about community arts, and they all say, oh, my God, he's destroyed the Adelaide Festival that once stood for quality, and now we're going to have really rot-gut, you know, terrible, you know, community plays. One of the things that really, I have to say, shocked me when I got to Australia was to look at the budgets of a lot of Australian cultural institutions and see again and again that the largest amount of money is given to artists from abroad. And the largest amount of money is invested in culture from abroad. And then some small percentage of that is given to Australian artists. And my attitude is, it's a wonder there's any culture here at all, if that's what's going down. And it's time, really, to build a cultural scene here that is equal to anything anywhere in the world. And it's the same thing. It's just, if you feed your neighbor's children every day but only give your own children the leftovers, just doesn't make sense. And what would it be like not just to support your children on the days when they do well in school. Hello. You can't just say, oh, well, when this work measures up, we'll support it. What it means is with your children, you support them every single day 100%. And you let them raise the level. And that's very important for art in Australia right now. Right now, it's an extraordinary time, and I tend to think that the most important art happens when history's being made. You know, Beethoven's Eroica, or Picasso's Guernica or anything you want to pick, you know, the Eroica changed the history of music, not because Beethoven felt like using a bigger orchestra than was ever used before and making more noise with it, but he was working in a city under siege. And that piece of music is what it's like to survive a siege. And you feel it from those first notes. And that's what's going on. And it's not a corporate entertainment option. It's not, you know, the champagne reception area cordoned off over in the corner. Beethoven is writing for people who are being bombarded. And that's what that music's about. And the real artists do their great work when the times call for it. And, you know, I've come under a fair amount of attack for saying, well, you know, we're going to focus on very, very political subjects. People say, oh my God. But the important thing is that we cannot leave politics to the politicians. These topics are too important to be used as political footballs. These topics have, as any of you know who cover economic or social or political issues, they are primarily human questions. And before they are political or economic or social, they are cultural. What the cultural dimension is of drug treatment strategies, when you actually get into real people's lives, not statistics, not deciding that, you know, so-and-so is evil or this group of people are evil, but it's your own 17-year-old daughter who's on heroin, suddenly you begin to get different ideas about locking them up and throwing away the key. Suddenly you begin to realize maybe treatment would be better than punishment. Suddenly it begins to open out in another way. As these issues that you have a ream of opinions about, suddenly you have a personal stake. Suddenly it's in your home. And all your opinions start melting away as you're just trying to deal with your own 17-year-old daughter. And that's what the arts are about. The arts are about humanizing all of these things that are paraded in front of us every day and saying as soon as you actually touch the reality of it, it's no longer conservative versus progressive. It's human. None of these issues fit in political categories, actually. All of these issues are larger than political categories. And it's only when we have the space to think about them outside of political categories that we can finally shed a little light and not just some more heat. And so what an arts festival is about, you know, thrilling, kind of delirious and magnetic surround, getting a bunch of people together who would never otherwise have a conversation. People who would never otherwise be in the room with each other. What the arts are about is a demilitarized zone. It's a place where people can put down their weapons and enter a room and talk. And the arts are about giving people that space in their lives. And we've all been, you know, alive in a period where so many issues have been flattened into these ridiculous and nonsensical formulas that, you know, don't begin to match people's real health needs. Talk about the budget cuts in healthcare and the decisions, the painful decisions that are made every day about who to treat and who not to treat, which programs you can offer and which programs you just can't offer for people in this neighborhood. These are real issues that are going on every day. But the public doesn't have much connection to them until that day when you're bringing your daughter to the hospital and that program was shut 2 years ago. And so can we, you know, what the Greeks did, you know, the ancient Greeks, is they made a festival. They made a festival once a year where everybody in Athens trooped out to the side of a mountain where they carved a theater out of the side of the mountain so the whole population could sit there and hear about how you treated the prisoners in the last war, what it meant that we finally had to kill our parents. You know, the Oresteia. Electra. Kids killing their parents. At the end of the day, it's not enough to talk about that in legal terms. It's not enough just to have the court deal with it. Legally, we know what should happen. These kids murdered their parents. They really did. We know they did. But actually, what's really going on? You can put them in jail, but you haven't solved the problem. The Greeks knew you had to make a space to deal with the reality that this violence is going on between parents and children. What is the suicide rate about in this part of the world? That's not just a black problem. It's a white problem. We're all living with it. Where do we have the space to ask ourselves any questions about that and to share with each other any of the reality, of the grief, of what we might propose to do to help solve something that's not going away? We're human beings and we need human space. Space to be human. Not just to be productive, not just to be successful, but just to be human. And part of us needs a kind of consolation, needs that, frankly, music is the only thing that can go in there. And poetry, you know, we need people to find better words for us because the words we're using aren't working. The word reconciliation, you know, we understand the impulse behind it, but where does that really lead? What is really inside that word? What is the actual hope that's inside that word? How do we articulate that? We need to find the words so that we can find our feelings again and connect to what in our generation we really are hoping to accomplish on the face of the earth. Because, you know, on the Day of Judgment, God is not going to ask you if you succeeded in business. There's like other reasons we're here. And what is it in our generation we were able to move forward, we were able to accomplish, we were able to just lift. And obviously the work to be done goes across generations. We're embarking in the festival on a bunch of things that, you know, will be in embryonic phase in March of 2002, because the work to be done is the work of generations. And all we're hoping to do is something that 200 years from now people look back and are proud of. And that's the yardstick, is to say what little, you know, the next 2 inches we were able to achieve in a long, long, long march. And we will just we're able to move a little farther forward on these questions as this country is finding itself. So the hope of this festival is to ask some of the larger questions, but in a surround that is really gives people joy, gives people pleasure, gives people, you know, relief, gives people a sense of collective pleasure that we're sharing something, that we're not alone with what we're working on, but we're working on it together and we can share some of this stuff. And we're not afraid of it because we don't have to be afraid of it, because it's so much better not to be afraid of it, so much better to deal with it than not to deal with it. And the festival can be an occasion where we show the world what it's like to deal with a few things. And the reason the world will want to come to Adelaide is because we're actually setting an example in the new century of what it's like to deal with the real issues. And for a hype-weary population to just get real. And to attempt to put our feet on the ground. And not to have that much spin, but to just try and have a little more actual, put your shoulder to the wheel and work through the questions with people. The previous festivals have been, of course, programmed by brilliant, brilliant single individuals. And this one is a little different. For one thing, because I'm from America and I don't get it, and as you can tell, I don't always know what's going on around here, and I need to ask someone. So the festival is going to be programmed with working groups. Notice I did not use the word committees. Working groups. Artists who live up and down the Murray River are gathering to begin to create a series of projects together. Artists who are across rural Australia, South Australia, are gathering to begin to share and create projects together. A lot of the festival is focused on subject matter rather than art form or discipline, because we've all gotten used to the categories of music. Oh, I like this kind of music, not that kind of music. Dance. I like this kind of dance or that kind of dance. Instead, the festival will be organized around water. Will there be any? What are you going to do about it? Around which there's poetry, music, dance, visual art, all happening. And you go and you engage with the totality of the picture. And if it's not a kind of music you like, well, maybe you'll find out it's more interesting than you thought. But in every case, you're not going for what you already think you know or like. And it's not about interesting an arts public, because I figure the arts public is going to be with us. But it's about, you know, people for whom health care, for whom question of drinking water, for whom the larger questions are of interest, and it's the arts demonstrating that they're not a leisure option for a bored, overfed population. They're the core of what we're all working on. They're giving us the language to do what we're all really doing every day. Whether it's health care or homeless shelters, alcoholism, or architecture, that we need to create the space to share this stuff and let the best ideas come forward and let the real dimensionality be felt and shared by everyone. And instead of just having tons of rhetoric, which is what most of these issues are usually covered in, invite people to speak personally. Can we get personal about all of this stuff? And let the rhetoric fall away. So the festival will have, we're just making it now. I mean, it's pretty amazing. I've hired 8 associate directors for a whole range of different fields, but we're all working interdisciplinarily. So, you know, Gay Bilson, who's, of course, officially hired to supervise the food program, is actually curating the music program. Amanda McDonald Crowley, who has just left her job as the head of the Australian Network for Art and Technology, and she's coming to make the IT and new media part of the festival, so the whole festival's online and national and international, is actually going to curate the food part of the program. Because, again, it's about all of us crossing the lines. It's about, if you look at any human being, the range of interests are really wide, and most people are not who you think they are, and most people like music you would never guess they like, and most people like food you would never guess they like, and most people, like all of us, are, thank God, surprising, please. And could we, like, start to reflect that in public? Wouldn't that be a blast? So the idea is that, you know, everything's interconnected. And so when you go to a concert, there's actually food there. There's a poetry reading going on. There's a whole visual art installation. There's, you know, everything is part of everything else and really starts connecting. And that's really what a festival can do. You know, and certain, you know, people have been sending us applications, and, you know, I just say, well, you could do this in your regular theater season, so do it. Don't bother me. A festival is about something you couldn't do otherwise. A festival is that moment where we all reach beyond our usual limits, and we're just, you know, absolutely in free fall in this wide open space where we finally have permission not to have business as usual. A festival is, for the next 2 weeks, business as usual stops. And we all do something we've just dreamed of, but that every day of our lives we were told, oh, that's not possible. And the arts are about reinforcing the fact that the impossible is possible. It's just hard. What it means when, you know, a couple years ago, John Cage wrote the Freeman Etudes for the brilliant violinist Paul Zukofsky. And Paul is just, I mean, Paul is simply one of the great violinists alive. I mean, just, ferocious. He got the score. He said, this is unplayable. It was commissioned for him. And he said, I can't play this. 5 years later, Irvine Arditi came along and played the John Cage Freeman Etudes. Because it's about the fact that what you thought was impossible is possible. It just takes a lot of work. And maybe you need a few more years to work on it. And artists are about holding up an image for politicians that it's worth taking the trouble to do it the hard way. Like cleaning up a toxic waste site. A quick solution is usually not a very good idea. It's better to take it the long way, work through it in all the layers, so that everybody has ownership of the final result. And that's what the festival is about, is opening up the process. We have a steering committee of 20 artists from across the country, who just met again on Sunday, where we talk through the large issues and create a national arts agenda, saying, where do we want to be 10 and 20 years from now? Artists from Perth, from Brisbane, from Darwin, from Adelaide, from across the country, come together to make this festival basically an opportunity for the national community to set its sights for the next decade. Those meetings are exhilarating and exhausting because people are looking around them and thinking hard and responding deeply. And as I say, after we get past this surge of public relations, what is next? post-Olympics? What is the real building, brick by brick, the real work that needs to be done for the next century? Where does the next generation need to move? What kind of space do we need to make for them? What kind of funding and resources do we need to direct their way? Because there's a whole generation we're not really hearing from at the moment. Generation that was under the hooves in Melbourne the last few days, who aren't just hooligans, obviously, who have a lot to say. And it's a pretty sad society that is unable to listen to its own children. And we need to make a place where we can hear the voices of a young generation and not just dismiss them so quickly. Yes, they have things to learn, sure. But my God, they also have things to teach, to remind us of everything we cared about when we were 18 years old and what we thought we'd devote our lives to. It's not a bad thing to remember. It's not bad to revisit that part of each of ourselves. So hopefully the festival will have a very large youth component and dimension. And I have to say, I mean to emphasize real pleasure. If you'll excuse me for saying it, I'm just into pleasure. You know, pleasure is a whole lot more attractive and interesting than like telling people how awful everything is instead invite people to just take part in something that is pleasurable and inclusive, that awakens the senses, that relaxes people, that unwinds an uptight situation. And a festival is that. A festival is just sheer pleasure at being alive and really emphasizing that. And that's why food will be all over everything. Hello. But the other side of the food issue and what I want to go further with, and then I'll stop and open this to questions, because I know people here have a lot to hurl. The other big dimension that we're working on a lot in the festival with this interdisciplinary thing is art and science. Right now, a lot of the most extraordinary things are going on in technology and science that are changing the way we live. And at the same time, the general public is really virtually clueless. And these are serious issues. So part of the festival is about teaming scientists and artists to try and open up lines of communication about the implications of the huge scientific developments that are underway, both as trying to offer some humanities to the sciences, because obviously the human questions need to be asked, and scientists need to be challenged by them. And at the same time, we're at a very interesting moment where science realizes it can't solve everything. We went through the 20th century where science could solve everything, and we've come out the other side. So, for example, this last year in Berkeley, I was part of a working group of artists and doctors talking about death and dying and what a good death is. Like, they've done everything they could think of in a terminal ward. And is that a good death? Science has found its limits. There's a whole bunch of things that we have to talk about in other ways, and we have to appreciate in other ways. There's a lot more depth waiting for all of us and a lot more pleasure. So that's the job. Okay, we should probably throw this open. Oh, great, fabulous.
Now questions from the media. And remember, please, to talk to the microphone and give your name and the media organisation you represent, please. Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you for that. I'm Rex Jury from the Advertiser. I've got two quite separate questions. I didn't know I was going to be on first, so I hadn't really phrased them. Have you had a conversation, that conversation, with our Premier John Olsen? And if so, what was his reaction? If not, are you going to have that conversation? Would you please give me his reaction when you have it? But a quite separate question to a point you touched on. What has the last generation, and I'm bold to lump you in with my generation, but our generation actually achieved?
Right. Well, you know, first of all, I will certainly tell Mr. Olsen of your concern and interest, and I'm sure that will move him. We've had a glancing conversation. I can't say we went the distance. All of which is to say, what's really impressive is the current government has been extraordinarily supportive and helped bring me to town and is really supporting this festival in an extraordinary way. I have challenged them very seriously, and the answer came back last Friday afternoon that they are behind it 100%, which I am amazed and impressed by. And the, you know, because for a while there was this sense that this was a state that was afraid to look forward. And what has come back is quite the opposite. And after we finish this session, I go right to Michael Armitage's office to deal with, you know, the new IT initiative and the role the festival will be playing in that. And I have to say, I'm quite impressed at the level of support. And that people are up for the challenge of it, and the and really with you know, because you always go through a period where people are a little nervous, and then finally people realize, wait a minute, this is real, and then they say, okay, let's go. So that has happened, and the government has really supported us in extraordinary ways, and we're going to work because so much of the program is going to be rural, is going to be, you know, around issues that involve a number of government departments and agencies. We're actually moving both within the Ministry for Arts, but also outside of it, and really with a layered approach to different communities. And so the politicians recognize also that the difference with this festival is it's not just coming along telling people what we're going to give them, but we're having all these community meetings, all these working groups. We're going to people and asking them what they need and what they're looking for. And we're talking to different communities for, you know, the question of what they want to see next in their community and how we can help with that. And politicians recognize when you get out there and do the political work, and that's what this festival is doing. And so we're talking. It's actually, I'm pretty impressed. Yeah. Oh, and the last generation. I mean, I should emphasize one thing about the Adelaide Festival, one of the pleasures of coming here. So I was saying this at the table. In fact, you know, a lot of this festival, you know, we're trumpeting it as new. And so, you know, we can say 80% of the festival will be free. And everyone goes, oh, my God. But in fact, that was already the case in Robin Archer's festival. In fact, a bunch of the most interesting things have already been done, and I don't feel I have to reinvent the wheel. In fact, there are initiatives that Barry Kosky or Christopher Hunt or, well, Anthony Steele put forward that because the festival directorate changes every 2 years, some of the best ideas never get developed. You know, it happens once and then it's gone. And so what I'm finding is a lot of things that have happened in previous festivals, we're actually collecting those and taking them to the next step so that, you know, the old Adelaide Flower Day, you know, the floral carpets are actually going to come back in a new form. You know, what's cool is so many things here are in place and just need to be rewired, you know, so they connect to each other. And so I'm finding I don't have to reinvent the wheel. It's just about making a larger wheel turn. And that's what needs to happen in this place, because it's here. It just is now hooking it up and getting the momentum that this state needs from a kind of collective energy, from a project that involves lots of people all together all at the same time. Because what South Australia just could use is momentum. And that's what the festival's about.
Yes.
Peter, Frederick Tobin, Adelaide Institute. All English teachers would love to give you a big kiss, because what you've just said is exactly what we've been trying in schools for a long, long time, but politically correctness has prevented us from doing exactly what you want to do. As well, there are people placed in conceptual prisons, which perhaps...
Would you have a question, please?
Three questions are coming up.
Just take one, please.
What are you going to do in order to liberate people who are placed in the conceptual prison? The first one is hater, being labelled a hater or a self-hater. Then the second one, Holocaust denier. Three, anti-Semite. Four, racist. Five,
I think that'll do.
Neo-Nazi.
I think it'll do, thanks.
Now, will you let the real human dimensionality be shared by all? Will you invite people to speak personally and let the rhetoric fall away
and be tolerant of
human frailty?
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I mean, again, I think we all have had probably in our lives, I don't know how many people in the room today saw at one point or another the film The Sorrow and the Pity, the incredible documentary that was made in France after the Second World War that opened up those issues in a way that no amount of statistics or history books could touch. I mean, I think that's so important. And again, to take on the hard stuff, not the easy stuff. Because, you know, easier tasks can usually be solved by business, and harder tasks have to be solved by artists. And the hard stuff, you have to go there, and first of all, it's about humanizing the person you most want to hate. I'm told the film Chopper is impressive. Have people seen that recently? I met the folks doing it, and I think Eric, of course, is pretty brilliant. And I have to say, I think that is the work to do in Australia. I mean, of course, it's one of those wonderful things that when you survey most white people, they don't, you know, of the issues that need to be discussed, racism is quite low on the list. You survey most people who are not white, and racism at the top of the list. So, of course, there's a perceptual, you know, shift. And again, it's the work of generations, and we all have to just get used to living together. And culture is the way you do that. You know, it's just, again, having people sharing their lives in a relaxed atmosphere is three quarters of the job. And frankly, I think, as I've said this in public before, I think Australian sport is way ahead of Australian culture. And frankly, I would aspire in the cultural field to be as good as sport in terms of the range of Australians who are being put forward and celebrated. And if we could have the same representation in our major cultural institutions, that would be extraordinary. Yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions from the media? Being very quiet. Very quiet. Right here.
Yeah, well, you know, what I wish for most critics. I mean, that you're really in front of this group. That's intense. Actually, you know, my attitude with most critics, because they're really most of the serious people who are genuinely interested, so I love that. What I just try and impress upon most critics is that, like all of us, you know, your opinion is not worth a whole lot. I mean, let's put it this way. I mean, I don't just mean this for critics. I mean for all human beings. God did not create the world based on what you like. And if you haven't figured that out yet, you're going to have a long, hard life. You know, all of these things and all these people who you don't really like are here. Sorry. You know, and there's not much you can do about it, so chill out. You know, and you know, if you're... well, you know, and if you're still going through life based on your likes or dislikes, I think it's just not very interesting. You know, it's usually, you know, that's why, for example, in this festival, there'll be a lot of things that I personally don't like. But clearly someone on one of these working groups or community groups decided it was important. And if it's important for them, who am I to say it's not important? Clearly it's serving a need. And our first task is to meet people's needs, you know, not my opinion. You know, and so there'll be a lot of things in the festival that I personally don't subscribe to. But I do feel as a public institution, it's our task to put it forward, to put it out there, to make sure it's represented. You know, and that's a very, very important thing. And of course, the irony with critics is that usually their reviews get used 100 years later as you know for party pieces. You know, as just as hilarious that somebody didn't get Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, you know, kind of thing. And very rarely do reviews get referred to positively by subsequent history. And in fact, what people want is information. And what I think everybody wants is information. And what I think the task constantly for all of us is to not insert ourselves in the middle of that, you know, in a way that prevents the information from flowing. And of course I'm interested in what somebody thought of something, and they should write it like anyone. But also I want to make sure there's informational content that allows for things that you didn't like to still be represented. And I would like critics also to take that sense that they're actually representing something even though they didn't like it. You know, and that's a really hard task, human task for every one of us. How do you, in your own family, acknowledge your dad's point of view when in fact you really hate it? You know, yet you have to make room for it, because until you do, no one will be safe. You know, and so it's a human thing that's hard, is acknowledging a point of view you don't agree with. And that's what we're all struggling with. But I have to say, there's a new generation of critics that are pretty exciting, and where I get interested. Like, I'm reading and I get way interested, and that's great. Because you really want people reading to be interested, and you want to feel like it's the most interesting part of the paper. You know? Yeah.
Samela Harris from The Advertiser. I won't touch the references to critics. We do have a critics circle in Adelaide, and we hope we'll be working.
Definitely.
I'm quite delighted by the C.P. Snow implications of the festival, and I hope you're going to have mathematicians demonstrating how they quantify infinity and physicists analysing Zinn. But I'm wondering where the mainstream fits in. I hope that it's not going to be at expense entirely of high art. Could you enlarge a little?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, thanks, Samantha. Again, I mean, one of the things that's really important... Oh. Sam. Sorry. Excuse me. Correct me. Samela, thank you so much. I feel better now. Thank you. The big question, of course, critics are really helpful in terms of focusing people and directing people to something they wouldn't otherwise see or notice, and to make a case for things. And one of the things I really need a lot, to me, right now, some of the most extraordinary work is happening in parts of the world that you wouldn't know about. I've just been at the Telluride Film Festival this weekend, where I presented a Lifetime Achievement Award to a Korean film director,
and where the overwhelming hit of the festival was a Kurdish film made on the Iran-Iraqi border by a first-time director. Now, unless there are critics advocating for that, that film will never get seen. And yet, if you ask me anything that I've seen in the last year that I think the general public needs to see, it would be this Kurdish film to see what the results of the embargo have been on people, you know, living in small towns on this border. And the film is shot with the adults are mostly on the periphery of the film, and the film is mostly children. And it's an overwhelming insight into a moment of history that is ours, and yet who knew? And it needs critics to defend it, to promote it, to call everyone's attention to it, and to say, actually, that's mass culture. Like, the masses should no longer be insulted by being fed worthless garbage, but mass culture should be things that everybody cares about. So, in terms of mass culture, again, I emphasize most of the festival will be free, will be, you know, all kinds of music and all kinds of, you know, dance and, you know, a wild range of things. I mean, it's hardly esoteric what we're doing. In fact, again, I tend to think if you look at most... You know, it's something that truck drivers listen to every single day. You know, I mean, it's total mass culture is what we're talking about. It's like, get real. And it's, I'm with the truckers. And this is a festival for truckers. You know? Absolutely.
Yes. Elizabeth Salisbury from the Advertiser Adelaide and Opera London will save you up. The critics in general will save you up for later. And actually put you straight on how critics approach their work. It's got very little to do with what they like and don't like, but we won't deal with that now. But I hope I'll have something to write about, both for the Advertiser and for Opera London, in the next festival. It sounds from what you're saying now as though there won't be very much work for me to do, but I'll keep my hopes up. But what I'm really interested in is, I'm a practicing musician and music critic. If Gay Bilson is going to curate the music program, are you going to invite me to create your food program?
Wow, thank you. There we go. Take off the gloves. I hope that what I have outlined actually is content rich and actually creates an immense festival which will give everyone a lot to do. And again, I just have to emphasize, maybe it's because I'm a working artist and not a bureaucrat, that when I talk about art, I talk about it from the heart of its subject matter, what it's about and what we're really doing. And I don't talk about it from the external arrangements. And I... In no way am I trying to take anybody on or oppose anyone or versus the symphony or anything else. Again, I'm going to say the word inclusiveness. Again, I'm going to say the range of work represented will be incredibly wide rather than narrower. Again, I'm going to emphasize that the festival is designed to reach out to the widest range of audiences rather than an audience singular. Again, I'm going to emphasize that the festival is going to take many, 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 many forms, because that's what a festival can do. It's different from an opera season. It's different from a symphony season, because a symphony season is another concert. A festival, it can't just be another concert. There has to be something more involved with that concert that links it to what you ate before the concert, that links it to what you were talking about while you were eating, and that, in fact, again, brings the music forward as a conduit of content, subject matter. The music is there to express things. And again, one of the gifts of music that I spoke about maybe earlier in terms of grief or in terms of human emotions, whether it's exhilaration, just pleasure, is they can go to those places that people need. And so I think you're going to be run ragged in this festival. We're going to give you so much to do, and I hope you just have a blast. But I would emphasize that what we're doing is not particularly different. It's just normal. You know, this is what culture is about and what it does, and I hope it just is normal. And all I want to do is make it available, 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 accessible, accessible to the widest range of people. And I want to meet them where they are and talk about what's on their mind. And that's the gig.
I'll put it. Michael Owen from the Sunday Mail, Peter. At the start of your speech, you talked about the budget given to overseas artists. As an American, do you feel then that you should be running a festival given that you are an overseas artist? Without trying to be a smart ass about it.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Well, as an American, let's put it this way, I feel I can help raise more money. What I can do is raise some money here. And so that's a lot of my work is fundraising. And that I come from a situation in America where the arts are not particularly supported by the government very frequently. And so we are experienced working in America as raising a lot of money to just keep going. So for me, it's a much more normal mode of operation than for a lot of Australian artists. And so that will be one of the things I'm doing the most here, is really putting in place a full fundraising operation and really trying to reach quite far. I mean, let's see. As always, you've got to be hopeful every day. And I'm a kind of hopeful person. The early interest that has been shown by major corporations is extraordinary, because I think a lot of corporations recognize that for the festival to play a role in people's lives that's memorable and participatory is actually three-quarters of what most corporations are looking for in terms of client recognizability and loyalty. Is if you're contributing something that people care about, then they'll notice. And so it gives it a little deeper rootedness than a lot of arts funding, I would hope. But let's find out. You know, let's go there. And as an American, I'll do my best. Yes.
Excuse me. Catherine Good, advertiser. Part of the festival is you expect innovation, you expect groundbreaking events, you expect breaking through icons. But one of the issues that we're dealing with right now is what is really excellence and what is necessarily innovative, what is startling, what is exciting, maybe also total crap. So I'd like to know if you could be more specific about what you think are the criteria for excellence, and if you have any, you know, specific examples of things you've seen recently, but also what you're going to be looking for in this festival of reaching that kind of criteria.
Oh, thank you. Excellence is a very complicated phrase, because the question is always, who is excellence? You know, what somebody, you know, what a certain truck driver's idea of excellence is really different from mine. So I have to respect his field of excellence, but it's really different. And I think this is a big issue in multicultural questions, because again, a certain community that has a certain cultural practice will, this is a really important practice for them, and when I look at it, I don't see anything. And so this question of learning to see through other people's eyes is really, really important. So a lot of the excellence part of this festival really does come through very in-depth consultation with people, so that we begin to identify things that communities themselves identify as their highest aspiration. And when I say community, I don't just mean geographical or ethnic. You know, I mean a community of scientists. I mean a community of people who have any mutual interest that I personally would be unqualified to say what excellence represents in that field. So the sense of excellence is very much a moving target, because it constantly depends on context. And what a festival is about is context. You don't just see something isolated, but every event in a festival is in a larger context, and it's the context that creates the excellence, the path to get somewhere, that by the time you arrive here, you've seen this, this, and that, and therefore you have eyes and ears to see what's in front of you. Because as anything, as any human experience, it depends on what you're prepared to see. You know, if you've grown up your whole life eating McDonald's, you can go to the most expensive restaurant on earth and have the most exquisite food and find it indigestible. So it's really constantly context. And we have to always, always, always shape a context, always lead people to be able to situate themselves where they are, in what situation they are, and to know when is the time to insist on what kind of excellence. You know, excellence in what way. And that's pretty exciting. You know, we're really have gone past a notion where there's a single culture and a single arbitration board of what represents excellence in that culture. Multicultural world means that there are many cultures, that there are many, many hybrid versions of things that are underway. And I think also one of the things a festival is about is putting forward things that are in formation, that aren't finished yet, but that are quite the opposite, are just appearing on the horizon. And none of us quite know what we think of it because it's new and arriving. And usually, you know, when you think you know what's going to last forever, it tends not to. And that's always what's surprising. The other thing I would just mention in terms of standards. Okay. I'll stop now. I just one of the things that's really interesting for me, if I look back personally in some of the greatest experiences of my life, you know, just performances that I still remember to this day, they were a horrible mess. And it wasn't achieved. But there was this one moment in the second act that stayed with me 20 years later. And a whole bunch of other things that I saw that were, you know, perfectly neat, well done, professional, top of the line, and are gone from my memory. And I also think sometimes we just have to have a very, we have to look at everything for what it has to offer. And sometimes it's not a perfectly formed exterior, but the kernel is something memorable and profound. And I know certainly in my own work, I tend to find there are three great moments in the evening. The whole evening exists to keep those three moments afloat. And, you know, not everything works, and that's okay. Because, you know, you're getting to somewhere. And this festival, I think, will privilege the road to get there. And let everybody get there and then make up their mind. You know, and then hopefully have second and third thoughts afterwards. But you're right, it is the question right now. And I think that question is being opened up in very exciting ways. Very exciting ways.
Yeah. Mr. Peter Sellers. Oh my gosh. A South Australian icon, sir. St. Hugo, Coonawarra, Cabernet Sauvignon, one magnum of. Thank you.
Oh my God. Thank you very much, John. Thank you very much. Wow.
Okay, before we all start talking, let's draw the raffle. I'd like to call up Sarah Harris, senior writer for The Tiser, former arts editor of The Advertiser, great friend, always in awe of the way Sarah writes. And she's got some books for us too. How are you? How are you doing?
Oh, just grand.
Just grand. Here, hold on to those. Give them a good shake. We've got two cordless phones from Telstra, so get your tickets out.
Are we ready?
They're good. Rex says they're good. Okay, Sar, read us a ticket.
Bob Clark.
Hey! Yeah, Judith, just down there. Good on you, Bob.
Get the mobile phone?
Yes.
Another mobile phone?
No, cordless phone.
Cordless phone.
From Telstra.
Another one?
Yes.
Okay, it is David Nankervis.
David Nankervis. There we go. Okay, for this wonderful ticket package, Sarah, I got this after you told me to go get it, a ticket package from the Centre for the Performing Arts and the Elder Conservatorium. You said on the Razzle it's going to be fantastic. What do you know about
it? Well, Tom Stoppard's always very funny.
Right,
not
a farce.
Too hard. Yes.
A farce.
Yes.
Oh, right, okay, I didn't get it right.
Okay.
Okay, and that's playing at the Price Theatre in Grote Street, plus there's two tickets to the final evening concert for the Year of the Symphonic Stories at Elder Conservatorium. And that's on Friday the 27th, so that goes in the one package.
And I think it's Jan Angus gets to go.
Jan Angus. We have a press, radio and TV guide from Media Monitors, thanks to Di Carroll. That wonderful book, great book.
And it comes out as Red DDDDD 53.
Who's got Red 53? D53. Put your hand up. Where are you? Somebody got it? Over there? Terrific. Rightio. Walter Rogers, where are you, dear man? Where is he? Here he comes. Walter's got two vouchers. The first one is to the Rock Lobster. It's a $50 voucher in Gugis Street for some rock lobster and exotic seafood.
And it's Susan Indecipherable, 74
Caracusas.
Blue A.
Sue Caracusa, Susan? Hey! She deserves it. She organises these functions for us. $50 voucher from Ragoni's Bistro in Lee Street. Walter's got that one too for some fine Italian.
And it's Rosalba, Rosalba, Rosalba.
Now, Sar, you've got three book prizes here. Sar's been in to see Chris Bryce, the advertiser books editor. What have you got? First one.
We'll draw for it first. Yep. As long as I don't win it. Julie Mitchell is about to read Ita Buttrose's What is Love?
And the next one?
David Sly. Can we give it to the advertiser?
No.
Okay. Di Bellamy is going to trip off with Shirley MacLaine in her latest spiritual adventure.
Is she's up the back?
No, he wants it. No, he wants it.
The same one.
Oh, no. Who's that?
Yes, it is. Di Bellamy. Guess what? You've just won the other book too. Okay.
She very generously donated some.
Okay, we draw again for the other book. And Di Bellamy again.
Dig deeper.
Oh, God. How many tickets did you buy? Michael Wellborn is the lucky reader of The Rise and Fall of a Political Phenomenon, Jeff Kennett.
There we go.
Now, I had the carton of Hahn Premium from SA Brewing. David Sly, it's yours, because you didn't take the other one. David, that... Yeah, there you go, the carton of Hahn from SA Brewing. And we've got another carton of Hahn Premium Light.
Which goes to Nikki Stewart.
Yes, terrific.
And finally, Judith, hold up that wonderful calendar. This calendar is called SA Icon, and it's thanks to Detour Designs in Wakefield Street, graphic artists, and Kathy and Abra here today. Thank you for that. This is a wonderful calendar. Somebody's going to get it. Who is it?
DDD Red 46.
Red 46. D Red 46. Who's got it? Over here. There we go. There we go. Sar, thank you very much. Terrific. Thanks, Sar Harris. And just a quick reminder, put a circle around Friday the 20th of October for the next lunch. Peter Meakin, the Director of News and Current Affairs for the Nine Network. Peter's flying in from Sydney. It'll be a great lunch. And make sure you're here. Thank you for your attendance today.